To the Mishnah here on Daf Kufnun Aleph Amud Aleph, and that's Machshichim Alatchum. We had the Mishnah back on Daf Kufnun, and we spoke about Hachshech Alatchum. You're not allowed to go out on Shabbos to the end of the boundary in order to go after Shabbos immediately to do a malacha, which is prohibited on Shabbos. Our Mishnah deals with the case of Chashech L'tzorch Mitzvah, Machshichin al Tchum L'fakeach al Iskei Chala. So we're talking about a Kala, and she has needs, and he wants to take care of those needs immediately as Shabbos ends. So he goes out to the Tchum Shabbos, so it'll be located in close proximity, could immediately take care of and address the needs of the Kala. And another case is V'al Iske Ames, Lahavilo Aron V'Tachrichim. So that immediately after Shabbos, he can bring those utensils that are necessary to bury the dead, like an Aron and Tachrichim. And this is permissible, even though what he's doing will require malacha, but he's allowed to set himself up for this malacha to bring the coffin, the shrouds, because it's Litzorach Mitzvah. Nochri Shehevi Chalilim, a Gentile brought flutes on Shabbos, and he is helping us out for preparing for Hesped, to use them to bewail the dead at the funeral. And the Mishnah establishes Lo Yisbod Behem B'Shabbat Yisrael, that we don't use and benefit from these flutes at the funeral, and this is a knas, what we call, that the Chacham enacted a penalty, that a person should not benefit from a lach that's prohibited, which was done by a nachri on his behalf. Elin kein bo'u mimakom korov. Unless these flutes were brought from within the Tchum Shabbos. If they were, then even though it's being brought for the sake of Yisrael, but nevertheless, it's not absolutely clear that he's benefiting from this malach that was done on behalf of the Jew, because if it's coming close from a distance that's very close, then even after Shabbos, the Jew himself could have brought the chalilim, and the time that would elapse until he brought the chalilim would be the same amount of time that he has almost right after Shabbos. So there's no definite benefit. So if he derives very, very little, if any, benefit from that which is brought on Shabbos, then the knas doesn't apply. And the Mishnah goes on and says, now, Asu lo Aron, if the Nachrim, the Goyim, actually built a coffin, or alternatively, Chafru lo Kever, they actually dug a grave, is then you're allowed to bury the Jew in that grave immediately after Shabbos. But in Bishvil Yisrael, if it was done specifically for Yisrael, lo Yikover bo Olamis. So the first case of Asu lo Aron means it was not only created by a guy, but it was for a guy. The grave was not only dug by a guy, but for a guy. Then you're allowed to bury a Yisrael there. But if the kever was dug by a guy for the sake of Yisrael, then we don't bury our dead in such a makom kvura. So that this halacha in the Mishnah, the Jew for whom the coffin was made, or for whom the grave was made, may never be buried in it. Apparently other Jews can be buried in it. Again, we'll have to wait till after Shabbos, the amount of time that would elapse that it would take to dig the grave or build the coffin. So why is this ban? What is this? And it's permanent. So perhaps we could say that this is a case that was obvious to all, to the onlooker, that the coffin was constructed, or the grave was dug, specifically for a Jew. And If it was done specifically for a Jew, then that's a permanent ban, because this is a knas that was imposed whenever it's obvious that a labor was done by a guy for the sake of a Jew. So for example, let's say the flutes that we spoke about before, if they were obviously brought for no other purpose than for Jews, then that's going to engender this knas. That's Rashi's opinion. Now, in the case of the coffin and the grave, the Mishnah distinguishes between one was made that was made for a goy, and one was that was made explicitly for a Jew. We don't find that distinction with regard to the flutes. The Mishnah was dealing with flutes that were brought without any special intention, and they're forbidden for use. So the Ramban says that flutes were used exclusively by Jews in their funerals. So if the Gentile brings flutes, even if he didn't express his intention, it's assumed that he's acting on behalf of the Jews. But coffins and graves were used by both Jews and Gentiles. So unless the guy expresses his intention explicitly, we assume he's making it for a fellow Gentile. And now we can start the Gemara. The Mishnah says that we don't use these flutes as part of our hesped, as part of our ritual to bury the dead, because it was brought by a guy on Shabbos, unless we know for sure it was brought from a close place. So the Gemara says, "My makom karov," what's called a close place, how far? Rav Omar, mi makom karov mamish. In other words, we have to know for sure that it was brought inside, from inside the tchum, and we have to know that, you know, we can testify that the guy brought it from his house. We saw it in the guy's house right before Shabbos, so he must have brought it right now over Shabbos. It's very close. Shmuel Omar, even if we saw that the guy brought the flutes on Shabbos into the city, Chayshinan Shemachutz Lechoma Lanu, we have to worry about the following possibility, that maybe these flutes during the course of the night were outside of the walls of the city, even though they're within the Tchum of Shabbos, and it wasn't brought on Shabbos from Chutz L'Tchum. Let's give a summary of the Machlokas Rav and Shmuel, and de-emphasizing the word Chayshinan for a moment, because that word is going to throw us for a loop. Rav is the Machmir here, and Shmuel is the Mekil. That's not readily apparent. But Rav is telling us that you need absolute evidence to be 100% certain that these flutes were inside the Tchum of Shabbos at the beginning of Shabbos. Like you saw them in the house of the Nochri, which is within the Tchum Shabbos after Shabbos began. But once you have a doubt, then we have to be concerned that maybe the flutes came beyond the boundary outside the Tchum, and therefore they're us. Shmuel, on the other hand, is going to tell us that we're going to be Mekel, we're allowed to use the flutes right after Shabbos, as long as there's a possibility that they were in the Tchum Shabbos when Shabbos began. So that even if Liyatsu, we knew that these flutes came from outside the city, we can still permit them, because they may have been possibly within 2,000 amas of the city boundary, the outer wall, let's say. So according to Shmuel, what the Mishnah is telling us is that if a guy brings these chalilim, then a Jew will not be able to use them, you know, as part of the funeral procession, unless there's some possibility that they came from a nearby place. And that means that they're only going to be prohibited, according to Shmuel, if we know for sure that they were brought on Shabbos from outside the Tchum, which is the opposite of Rav. And again, even though the word Chayshinin is a little tricky, it throws us off, it's not used here in the normal way, he uses it in a certain sense, in the opposite sense, the Chayshinin Shema Chutz Lachom Olonu, which would mean that there is a possibility that the flutes were just outside the Choma, meaning within the Tchum of Shabbos, and that's enough to be matir the use of these flutes. So now the Gemara quotes our Mishnah as a support for Shmuel. Daiko Masnisen, let's be careful about reading the Mishnah precisely. Kavase de Shmuel. Why? The Katani, it says in our Mishnah, Asalo Aron Vechofar Lo Kever, Ye Kover Bo Yisrael, which means that if the Gentile made the coffin or he dug the grave, you can bury the Jew. That means even though there's a possibility that this aron or this kever was made specifically for a Jew, we don't know. Alma, we see that misfeka shari, that if we don't know whether or not the aron or the kever was made specifically for a Jew, then we can be makil and we could assume that it was made for prepared for a goy. Hachanami here too, with regard to the guy who brings the flutes, the chalilim, is misfek or shari. If we have a safek, we're going to be matir, and we're going to assume that the flutes were overnight, meaning on Shabbos, inside the tchum. That supports Shmuel. However, Tanya Kavasi de Rav, we have a brice in Masechta Machshirin of all places, that supports the sheet of Rav. Ear, She Yisrael v'nochrim darimba. So you have a city which is occupied by both Jews and non-Jews who reside within the city. Vaisa ba merchatz hamarachetzes. And there's a bathhouse that is used bis Shabbos, so it's functioning up and running on Shabbos. And the goyim are heating up water on Shabbos in this bathhouse. Im rov nachrim, if most of the city is made up of non-Jewish population, then la erev, immediately after Shabbos, rochets ba Yisrael miyad. In other words, we have a right to assume that the attendants, the balonim, who prepared the merchatz, and they heat up the water on Shabbos, their das is for the rov. And that means that their intention is to prepare this merchatz for the goyim, who are the rov. But if rov Yisrael, if the city is made up mostly of Jewish residents, they're the 51% of the population, yamtin, ad kedeshi yichelmu hamayim, the Yisrael wants to go into the bathhouse, into the hot water, to wash and bathe himself after Shabbos, he has to wait the period of time that it would take to heat up the water. Why? Because since the city is made up of Rov Yisrael, then those who heat up the water, we assume, are doing so on behalf of the Rov. And if it's Malacha that's done by a guy on behalf of the Jew, you're not allowed to benefit from it until the time passes by after Shabbos, which you could do the Malacha yourself, and therefore you're not benefiting from the Malacha of the guy. Mechtz al mechtz. If the city is 50-50, then the Mishnah tells us that Ad Kadeshi Chamu Chamin, it has the same status as a city that's mostly Jewish, and therefore we have to be choshish, we have to worry that it was heated up on behalf of the Israel, and therefore we have to wait until after Shabbos. So we see that in a Sufik situation, we assume Lechumra that it's Asur, and if we apply that principle here to the case of Rav, where we're not sure if the Aron was made for Yisrael, if the Kever was dug for Yisrael, we have to go L'chumra Mitzad Sofek. Now let's see the next part of the Mishnah in Machshirin. It says, Rabbi Yehuda Omer, Biambati Ktano. We have a small pool, and this is a pool of the bathhouse, and it's relatively small, and that's where the water gathers together. Im Yeshba Rishus, if there's a Rishus from the Malchus, the Shilton, the powers to be, the authorities, Rochets by Yisrael Miyad B'motzi Shabbos Afil B'ir Sh'ruba Yisrael. And even if the city is made up of mostly Jews, nevertheless, immediately after Shabbos, you're allowed to bathe there. So the Gemara asks, my Rishus, what does this Rishus mean? What does Rabbi Yehuda have in mind in Yesh Bar Rishus, and why is he matir in this case? So the Gemara answers, Omer Rabbi Yehuda, Omer Rabbi Yitzhak Bereid Rabbi Yehuda. Here's how we interpret Rabbi Yehuda. In Yesh Bar, Be'ir Adam Chashuv, if in this city there's a very outstanding individual, he's one of the officers of the city, and perhaps he's so important that he's in the government and he's one of the shlitim, the shalit, is then sheyesh lo asara avadim, and to show you and demonstrate how important, how much he's a man of status, he has at least 10 servants, and shemecham lo asar kumkumin, they heat up 10 kettles of water for him, bevasachas, all at the same time, bati ktana, again to fill up this very small pool, and in a very short time they heat up this small pool, is mutar lichotz b'miyad. Then we can assume that the water was heated up on behalf of this Adam Chashuv, this guy, and therefore the Jew is allowed to bathe in this pool immediately after Shabbos, because it was not heated up on behalf of the Jew, it was heated up for the guy, this Nachri Chashuv. Now we learned in our Mishnah that Osulo Aron veChafalo Kever, you cover Bo Yisrael. If the guy made the Aron or the Kever for the sake of a guy, then we're allowed to bury our Jewish deceased in that Aron or in that Kever. So the Gemara asks, Amai, why is it permissible to bury? And this means even immediately after Shabbos, because again we're assuming, and that's the mitzvah that the Mishnah is addressing, that the kever was buried on right for the purpose of a goy. So you're not being nenemi melecha Shabbos. Now, in the case of a merchatz, you remember that we accepted Rav Shita based on the Mishnah Machshir, and that we have to be machmir in a suffik. And Hachinami here too, shouldn't we apply the principle of yamtin b'chdei shiya aseh? We're not absolutely sure. And even though it's possible that the guy dug this kever li'atzmo for a guy, but nevertheless it's not sure, it's not definite, it's not certain, and therefore we should be choshesh that maybe he dug this kever on behalf of a Jew, and we should be machmer, just the way we were machmer in the case of chalilim, of the flutes, or we were machmer in the case of a city that was half Jewish, half not Jewish, in the Mishnah Machshirin, that we can't bathe until after Kadesh Yasa, until after Motzi Shabbos, plus the amount of time that it would take to do this malacha. Amar Ula, be omed, be asratya. The case in our Mishnah is where we find a kever that was dug in a highway, asratya, otherwise known as Derech HaMelech. And that's the place, the highway where the people go. And a Jew does not bury the dead on the highway. Therefore, we don't have to be choshesh that this kever was dug on behalf of a Jew, and therefore you're allowed to benefit from it. So the Gemara asks, Tenach kever, this I can understand. You found a grave that was dug by a guy in the middle of the highway. Aron, Ma'ikul Meimar. What proof do you have that the coffin was made for a guy. Maybe it was made for a Jew. Amar Rabbi Avo b'mutal al kivro. We're talking about an aron that is laid down upon the kever of a guy. And since it's munach on a kever of an astratia, we know it was made and prepared for a guy. So that's the case in our mission of a coffin that's lying on the Gentile's grave. In other words, it's on the grave that was dug on a highway, and we know therefore the coffin was manufactured for a guy. And this leads us to the second Mishnah on Daf Kufnun Aleph, which is on the bottom of the Amud. We've already described the Tzarchei Ames, which can be done by a guy on Shabbos. What are exactly these Tzarchei Ames that a mutter? Now, even in the case of a Yisrael doing the tzarchi, he's taking care of tzarchi ves, on Shabbos he's allowed to do so, the Yisrael is allowed to do so, obviously not to violate the Shabbos, but for example, sochen oso b'shemen u'medichen oso b'mayim v'lvad shelo yozes bo eiver. So he's allowed to anoint the dead, the corpse, and rinse him. And again, this is all done to retard the process of decomposition of the body before kvura, or to prevent the corpse lying in an undignified manner. But the condition is that he doesn't move any of the limbs of the deceased. He cannot lift up the hand or the foot or even the eyelid of the deceased because the corpse is muktzah. And we see that the iser of moving muktzah, tiltul muktzah, applies even if you move part of the object that's muktzah. And then the Mishnah says that shomtim esakar mitachtov, we're allowed to pull the pillow from under him, or the mattress that's underneath the deceased. And why would we do such a thing? We would want to lay the corpse on cold sand near his bed. Now again, we're not going to allow moving the body directly by taking it into the hands and moving it on the sand. We can't even move one limb of the deceased. But we're going to have to do it in some way, maybe indirectly. And the reason why we're doing this, the Mishnah says, and here we turn to Daf Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Beis, Bishvil Sheyamtin, which means he wants the body to remain moist. And if we keep the body in a warm place, it decomposes rapidly, and we want to keep it in a refrigerated place or a cool place, so the pillows and the mattresses keep the body relatively warm. The body therefore should be moved to the cooler dirt, the floor, and that will postpone or retard the rate of decomposition. Koshen es alechi, we're allowed to bind up the jaw, but lo sheyale, not that it should rise, el shelo yosif, it should not continue to drop. So if the mouth has begun to sag open, one may tie a strip of cloth around the head and the jaw to prevent any further sagging. However, one may not bind the cloth tightly to push the jaw backwards upwards, since, as stated above, he's not allowed to move any part of the corpse. V'chein kora shenishpara, in the case of a beam that broke, somchin osa besafsol obaruchos hamita, we can support the beam with a bench or with the side pieces of a bed. Now a bench has, of course, the status of a kli. And therefore, when we place it under the sagging beam, that's not considered bona. And that's also true of the side pieces of the bed. Lo shetala, we're not trying to raise the safsal, the bench, el shelo yosef, but it shouldn't continue to drop. So we're allowed to introduce this support only to the extent that it prevents the beam from dropping any lower. He's not allowed to raise the beam towards the original position where it fell from, because that would be bona. Now we're talking about a beam, and that's part of the building, as opposed to what we discussed before in the case of a safsal, which was a kli. Now the Gemara asks the following question. Omar Rabbi Yehuda Meshmuel, how can the Mishnah allow you to anoint or rinse a corpse on Shabbos? We have the following testimony from Shmuel. Maisa b'talmido shel Rabbi Meir. There was an incident of Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, one of the talmidim of Rabbi Meir. Shenichnas achbel lebeis hamerchatz. He was behind Rabbi Meir going into a bathhouse on Shabbos. Bikesh ladiach karka, and he wanted to wash the floor of the bathhouse in honor of Rabbi Meir. And again, there are a bunch of gzeros of chachamim about against use of a bathhouse on Shabbos. Even if we assume the water was heated up before Shabbos, nonetheless, to walk through a bathhouse or to bathe there in cold water was declared mutter back on Daf Mem. Amalo ein medichin. So Rabbi Meir stopped him and he said, "You're not allowed to wash the floor on Shabbos." Then losuch karka. So Rabbi Shimon ben Elazar, the Talmud of Rabbi Meir, decided that he would smear fragrant oil on the floor. And again, there were unpleasant odors, so this would disguise those odors. Omalo ein sachin, Rabbi Meir told him, "You're not allowed to smear oil on the floor." Now, assuming the stones of the floor are mukta, so it could be that Rabbi Meir asked smearing oil on the floor because of mukta. However, our Mishnah allows you to smear oil on a corpse, and that's also mukta. So how do we reconcile our Mishnah with Rabbi Meir? Our Mishnah allows you to smear the corpse, which is mukta, with oil, and Rabbi Meir prohibited smearing oil on the floor. So Gemara says that true, it's mutta to smear oil on a mukta object. And that's a conditional that you don't move the object. So the iser is tiltal. There's no iser maga in mukta, it's only tiltal. So why did Rabbi Meir tell the Talmud, in this case Rabbi Shimon, that he's not allowed to smear oil on the floor? After all, he's not moving the floor. So karka b'karka michlefa. That you could, that we risk a confusion between one floor and another type of floor. And what does it mean? If he's going to allow you to smear oil on a stone floor, he might come to smear oil on a dirt floor, and then he's going to be leveling out the gumos, and that comes under the category of bona. So that a person who would level out a dirt floor, and that's normally what he would level out, but the rabbi said, you know what, we're not going to allow you to smear oil on any type of floor, because they're not going to differentiate between one type of floor and another. However, meis bekarka lo michlaf, it would be going too far to assume that if you were to smear oil on a corpse, somebody's going to therefore think that you're allowed to smear oil on a floor. those two are not michlaf. There's no similarity between the two. Now, our Mishnah began with the words, one may attend to all the needs of the deceased. Let's read the Mishnah again. Osim kol tzarkeim. So why did the Mishnah add the word kol? Kol asuye mai, what's it coming to include? Lasuye hodetar rabbanon, as we learned in a brisa, mevim kli mekar uklei matachos. So we're talking about kli mekar, cooling vessels that cool, like for example glassware will cool you, metal vessels. Umenichem al kreso, we can put them on the corpse's stomach, so the cool temperature will again, as we said, retard the decomposition. Kadesh lo tifach, so the belly of the corpse will not swell up. Upokikin es nekavov, and we're allowed to stop up, plug up the corpse's orifices. Kadesh lo tikonis behem aruach, so that air will not enter into them, which would cause the body to swell. V'yaf Shlomo Omer b'chachmaso, and we find in Koheles that Shlomo with his great wisdom declared, Ad asher lo yerosek chevel hakesef, before the silver rope snaps. And what is this a reference to? Silver rope snaps. Zechut hashidra. This is a reference to the spinal cord, which is like a rope, and it's white like silver. So this 12th chapter of Koheles, in which Shlomo HaMelech admonishes the youth that they should repent while they're young, in good health, because with the advent of old age and death, that's going to be too late. Remember your Creator, he says, in the days of your youth, before the evil days come, and those years arrive of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. So Shlomo Mel compares a person's death to the collapse of a well. Asher lo yirasek chevel hakesef. And he says, repent before the silver rope snaps, and the golden bowl is shattered, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain. V'torutz gulas hazov tishover kad al hamabua, v'narotz hagalgal el habor. And the wheel is smashed at the pit. So you take a rope, you wind it around the wheel of a well, and you have a pitcher. So at one end of the rope there's a pitcher, the other end is a bowl that serves as a counterweight. So when the rope snaps near the bowl falls and breaks. The pitcher, now is no counterweight, also drags down, and it descends, and it also drags the wheel down with it. So we're learning a brisa that's going to interpret every single part of this metaphor of Koheles. And he says the following. When Koheles says, Asher lo yerosek chevel hakesef, before the silver rope snaps, that's a reference to the spinal cord, as we said before. V'tarutz gulas hazov, the golden bowl is shattered, ze amo. Now, what is amo? Now, gulas is a spring, like gulas mayim, the springs of water. And apparently, this is a remez, an allusion to the amo. He says here, the amo is mekaleches mayim v'novas kmo mayon. I think we're talking about, if I'm not mistaken, see if he points out anything here. He has here Shezav Right, it says here, Tarutz Gulas HaZahav. He says, Zahavu Miloshen Zav. Shezav Zera B'tocha Isha. So he injects sperm into the woman. So that's the Oma. And that's called Gulas, like a Mayan. So that's the member. So it means Li'achar Mosa Odom Amosod Nishberes. Okay. Vaita. Vishishover Kad Ana Maboa. Maboa Zea Keres. The golden bowl is shattered, and the pitcher is broken at the fountain. And that's a reference to the stomach, which is likened to a pitcher into which beverages are poured. So basically, Shlomo is teaching in this pasuk that a person's death, his stomach tends to swell and burst, as we saw earlier. If we want to cool off his stomach. And then it says, "V'narotza galgal el abar," the wheel is smashed at the pit. Ze perish. This is a reference to excrement. So the word galgal here, the wheel, is interpreted as galol, golol. Golol is excrement. And the bar, the pit, is an allusion to the mouth. So what the verse is telling us is that when the stomach bursts, excrement oozes from it and falls into the corpse's mouth. And then the pasuk says, this is in Malachi, Vizeresi Peresh al Pnechem. I will scatter excrement on your faces, the excrement of your festivals, Parash Chageichem. So these hafroshos of a mess spread out over the face, and it's all a result of the fact that his stomach swells and is broken. Omer of Huna v'Amri Lo, Omer of Chaga. Now, who are these about whom he's describing? Elu b'nei Adam shemenichem divrei Torah v'osim kol yimeim kechagim. So Malachi is alluding a rebuke to those who forsake the words of the Torah. They turn their days into festivals and occasions for self-indulgence. So the word perish, which is repeated twice, perish al pnechem and perish chageichem. We're going to use one for a drash, and perish, which means to separate, is an allusion to those who separate themselves from the Torah, and chageichem, it doesn't say chag Hashem, the festivals of God, but your festivals. That means you make festivals of a secular nature just for the sake of self-indulgence. And this Gemara, by the way, is quoted by the Rambam in the fifth parak of Hilchos Deos, when he talks about those who indulge excessively in eating and in drinking. Amar Rabbi Levi, Amar Rav Papi, Amar Rabbi Yeshua, Liachar Shloshi Yomim, 3 days after the death of a person, Kreso Nivkas, his stomach will burst, and Nofeles Lo Al Panov, I guess he means the excrement will fall on his face. The Omerislo in the stomach says to him, Tov Mashina Satabi, Tol, excuse me, take back what you put into me. The Mishnah now discusses Tzarchei HaMes. Ein Ma'atzmin Es Enei HaMes B'Shabbos. We're not allowed to close the eyes of the dead on Shabbos. Something that we do if it was a weekday. But he's moving the eyelids, and that's a limb, and that's prohibited because of muktzah, as we discussed. V'lo b'chol im yitzias nefesh. And even on a weekday, we have a problem of closing the eyes at the moment of death, because this might speed up the process of death. He says, "Afil yachar yitzias nafsho, kevan shem meined es risei einov harei osel lahazis bo aver." Okay, so he doesn't tell you why this is so, and it's after yitzias nafsho, and he says, "Meined risei." Enov. I'm not sure what the issue is. That's on Shabbos. One second. V'lo b'chol im yitzias nefesh. So again, he writes miyad li achar yitzias nefesh. And again, we're trying to figure out why that's osur. V'amatzim im yitzias nefesh reizeh shofech domim. Oh, so that makes sense, that we're talking about a person who we're not 100% sure he died yet. Maybe he's just fainted, and by closing his eyes, he actually causes his death, or makes his death come more fast. He's Makariv Misoso, and that's Shvichas Dom. Because even the slightest movement, Rashi says, can hasten his death. So we have to wait a certain length of time before closing the eyes, because we're not sure that the dead person is in fact dead. Maybe he's just unconscious. Now here's Machlokas HaPoskim, that one who closes the eyes at the moment of death is a murderer. Does it mean that he actually could be guilty of murder? Meaning he's subject to the death penalty, that's one opinion. Sefer Yireim, one of the Bali Atosis. Well, the Mishnah statement is not to be taken literally, as the Radbaz would claim, and he's not Chayiv Misa for such a thing. Torah Rabbana, we learned in a Braisa, Hama'atzmo im yitzias ha'nefesh ha'reza shofech domim, if he closes the eyes of a dying person at the moment of death, he's a murderer. Moshal, we can compare this to a ner, a flame of a candle, shekovav oleches, it's about to go out, adam eniach etzpo oleh, he puts a finger on it, miyad kovs, and it goes out immediately. So too, in the nimshal, if he touches the dying person, he may indeed hasten his death. Tanya, we learned in a brisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, harotza shis atzmu enov shel mes, if a person desires that the eyes of a dead person should close, nofeach lo yayin v'chotmo, he should blow wine into the corpse's nose, v'nosein shemen b'mrisei enov, he should put oil between the corpse's eyelashes, v'ochez b'shnei gudle raglov, he should grab hold of or squeeze the corpse's two big toes, v'hein misatzme me'aleim, and the eyes would close of their own accord. L'fishe gidei einav shal odom yordin atzof raglov, because I guess the sinews of the eyelids go all the way down to his feet, and when he holds on to the big toes of the feet, nis atzmos ha'einai. Now I'm not sure if this is tried and true. Is a Gemara in Yuma that derives this from a pasuk, v'chai bohem, v'lo sheyomus bohem. No, we didn't get to that yet, sorry. Tanya, first we have to read this brisa, Rav Shimon Gamliel Omer, tinok shel ben yomo, chai mechalin olav es ha-shabbos. So that's the pasuk that we mentioned before, v'chai bohem, which applies even to the baby who has just been born. He's a day-old baby. And we're going to desecrate and override the Shabbos for his sake, to save him from death. And even David Melch Yisrael, once he dies, Ein Mechalon of the Shabbos. We cannot violate the Shabbos even for David HaMelech. In fact, David HaMelech actually died on Shabbos, as the Gemara told us back on Daf Lamed, and they weren't Mechal Shabbos for him. They asked whether they could be metaltal his body, take it out of the sun, till they found a heter for that. The Gemara tells us that Tinok ben Yomo Chai Mechalon of the Shabbos Omer Torah Chalel of Shabbos Echad, save him by desecrating one Shabbos. Kadesh Yishmar Shabbosos Harbe. So it's worth it. Again, the Gemara and Yuma derives this from Pasuk V'Chai Bohem, but our Gemara, and there is one such day at the end of Yuma, derives it not because of the mitzvah of V'Chai Bohem, but rather because it's worth it to give up one mitzvah for the sake of many mitzvahs. He says the following, that in the case of David HaMelech, Melech Yisrael Shemes, Ein Mechalel, Kevin Shemes, Adam Batel Min HaMitzvahs, V'Hainu D'Yom Rabbi Yochanan, based on a pasuk in Tehillim, V'Meisim Chofshi, Kevin Shemes, Adam Nasa Chofshi Min HaMitzvahs. So once he dies, he doesn't have any other mitzvahs. Now, what was the Havamina here, if not for the drasha of Rabbi Yochanan? What shaykhus would there be of Kiyum HaMitzvah for a mess? Maybe we would say that we can put him in a talis with tzitzis, and if he has a beged of shatnas, we take that off. Yisayinu Omer Shagam Olav Yesh Lechal Shabbos Achas Kadei Sheyishmar Shabbos Harbe. Not sure exactly what Sheyishmar Shabbos Harbe would be here in this context. Sanya, we learned in a braisa, Rav Shimon Elazar Omer, even a Tinok Ben Yomo Chai, if he's alive, is Ein Tzarech L'Shomro Min HaChulda U'Min HaGeborim. In other words, we don't have to protect him. What does this mean? That we don't have to protect him? He says, we don't have to guard him from being bitten by a weasel or a mice, for weasels and mice are afraid of living human beings, no matter how tiny and helpless they are. Aval Og Melech HaBoshen Mes, if this great giant dies, Tzarech L'Shomro Min HaChulda Min HaGeborim, because he's dead. And the weasels and mice are afraid of living beings, not dead beings. So it could be as great as Og Melech HaBoshen, it matters not. Shenemar U'morachem V'chitchem Yiyeh. So it says in Bereishis that after the flood, Noach, Hashem tells Noach that the animals are going to fear the human beings. Kol zman shadam chai, as long as he's alive, because it says v'chitchem, and we're going to read it as chiyuschem, is a mosum utel salbrios, the fear of a human being lies upon all creatures, but kevin shemes, once he dies, butla, a muscle, they no longer have a fear of him. Amra Papa Naktinon Arye Abi Betray Lo Nofal. A lion will not run after two people who are together in order to kill them. And that's based on the Pasuk Morachem V'chitchem Yal Kol Chayas Ha'aretz. And Morachem is in Lashon Rabim, and this means that there are two people, and Kol Chayas Ha'aretz Yireos Mehem Af Ha'ri B'chlal. Pasuk indicates that all animals are afraid of this pair of people, and that includes the lion as well. So whereas Chokach Hazina did not feel, we see in fact in Metzius that the lion runs even after two people, So the answer is Ahu. In other words, that could be explained. Kidu Rami Bar Abba Diyama Rami Rechame in Chai Shaletzis Bodama Sheyidme Lo Kibehema. A wild beast does not control or subjugate man unless the man appears like an animal. Shenemar Pasukintilim Odom Biyikar Bal Yolin. As for man in glory, he shall not repose. Nimshal Kabemus Nidmo is ruled when he appears like an animal to an animal. So then we go back to Rav Papa, who stated that lions do not attack groups of people, two people. This is only true when they appear to the lions as people. But lions will attack a group of people when they regard the people as animals, which occurs when a person's evil behavior earns him a heavenly death penalty. So the lion will attack him because the lion thinks he's an animal. The Maral claims that Rami Bar Abba doesn't mean that in the eyes of the animal the person actually appears to be another animal. It means if he acts in an unworthy manner, the animal loses fear of attacking him. Om Rab Chanina Osur Lishon Bebayis Yechidi. One is enjoined from sleeping in a house alone. V'chol ha-yoshem b'bayis achid ha-chazoso lilis. Now, a person may get nervous when he's alone, and you're not allowed to put yourself into a situation where you'll have an anxiety attack. So if a person finds himself in such a situation, he should try to overcome fear, trust in God, engage in the study of Torah, and that'll afford him with protection against harm. If he sleeps at night in a room where the door is closed, and he's alone, then he'll be seized by a demon. Lilith is the mother of demons. Now the Gemara has another braisa regarding the greatness of man in relationship to an animal. In Sanya we learned through Rabbi Shimon Elazar Omer, Asei Tztoka Miyad Kshi Mizdamenes Liyodcha Ad Shata Motzei Anim Umotzi Lecha V'yodcha B'yodecha. Perform acts of charity while you still can find someone to receive it from you, and while you have the money to give, and you're still in control, you're still alive. So if you enjoy good health and you're able to perform charity, when you become old and infirm, it'll be physically hard to perform such deeds, then take advantage of the opportunity now without procrastinating. The Av Shlomo Amar B'Chachmaso, Shlomo in the book of Koheles, declares, U'zecharas baracha b'mei b'churosecha ad asher lo yavo yimei ra'ah. Remember your Creator in the days of your youth before evil days come. Elu yimei zikna, these are the evil days of old age. V'higiyu shonim asher tomar ein li bohem chefetz. And those years will arrive, of which you will say, I have no pleasure in them. Elu yimei hamashiach she'em behem lo zchus v'lo chova. There will be no opportunity to acquire merit or liability. Lo nitan yeh lizchus lizchot ba'otan ha'yamim b'mitzvah stoka. Kevin shekulam yu ashirim, they'll all be wealthy. V'lo yischayvu b'yosam ha'yamim alimonus mitztoka mishum shelo yu aniyim. There won't be poor people at the time of Mashiach. So even though there won't be an opportunity to fulfill the mitzvah of tzedakah, but other mitzvahs will not be batel the imos hamashiach, and we say that there won't be any bittel of mitzvahs before tchias hamesim, and ein b'hem lo zchus v'lo chova, that's a reference to generally about mitzvahs, Nemar l'gabi klala mitzvus elishu mefarsho kifi azman shali achar tchiyas hameisim. Okay, so that's after tchiyas hameisim. Oh, this is the famous machlokes about the sequence about Mashiach and tchiyas hameisim. Upliga de Shmuel, the Amr Shmuel ein bein olam azel yimosa Mashiach l'shivud malchus pilvad yimosa Mashiach. The Jewish people will not be subjugated to the other nations of the world. But as far as any other difference are concerned, there are no other differences. And therefore, even be most of Mashiach, there will be poor people. That's Shmuel's position. Shenemar, as the Pasuk says in Dvarim, Ki lo yechdal evyon mikerev ha'aretz. There will be no end or no ceasing to exist of poor people in the land. So according to Shmuel, all the natural laws and the basic forms of society, including poor people and economic differentiation, those will not change at Yemos HaMashiach. There will be plenty of opportunity to give charity or Chas V'Shalom to refuse to do so. Now the Gemara is going to say that there's a brisa that disagrees with Shmuel. I mean, that's a little bit unusual. Usually the Gemara would challenge Shmuel by quoting a brisa. But it's possible that this brisa is not authoritative. Or maybe, since the topic here is that I got it, so therefore Shmuel is authorized to challenge a brisa. Now, once we cited the opinion before Shmuel that poverty will not exist in the Messianic era, the Gemara discusses poverty in our era. Tanya, Rebbe Lezer, HaKapar, Omer, Li'olam Yavakesh Adam Rachmim Al Midazu. A person should always ask for mercy from God regarding this fate, meaning poverty. Shalo Yavol Lidei Anius, Kevan, Shederech HaOlam Hi, Sha'af Im Hulo Ba Lidei Anius Ba B'no. Because even if he's not poor, maybe hit the next generation and his children, Chas Sholem, might become poor. V'im hu lo ba, and if poverty doesn't come, ba, b'no, right? Okay, so if he doesn't become poor, his son might become poor. V'im b'no lo ba, if his son does not become poor, ben benobah, it could happen in the next generation. Shenemar, as it says in the Pasuk, with regard to the mitzvah of halvah to a poor person, it says, Nason titein lo v'lo yera levavcha besito lo ki beglal adov razei recha Hashem alkech v'chol ma'aseh v'chol mishlach yodecha. And Tana de Bei Rabbi Shmuel, this brisa from the Beis Medrash, Rabbi Shmuel says that when it says Biglal, ki Biglal Adav Razeh, it means Biglal Shehu Chozer, Galgal Shehu Chozer Ba'olam. That poverty is like a wheel that goes around and around the world. And it may, Chas V'Shalom, impact the next generation or the one after it. Hainu Shashir, She'eno Nosein La'oni, is Hashem Hofecho Soli'oni. If the rich person doesn't give charity to the poor, he may turn out to be poor. Yes, also oni Hashem ofek liyashir, and the poor person that did not receive from the yashir his due, his charity, he will become rich. And that's like the galgal, the chelkia galgal, mishafchim milamala lamato umilamato lamala. Omer of Yosef naktinon. Notice we have a Mesorah that high Tzuvir Rabbanit Talmud Chacham, who is young and he's sharp, lo mi'adi, he doesn't become a poor person. So the Gemara immediately asks, v'ka chazina demi'ani, we see plenty of Talmidei Chachamim that are poor. The Gemara answers, im isa demi'ani, if you see that he's poor and he's a Talmud Chacham, then aduri apischa lo mahadir. He's not going to have to panhandle and knock on doors. Oni, on that level, is not appropriate for a Talmud Chacham. Tamar Shah writes, that Talmid Chochmeinu mezalzel bi'atzmo lechazal psochim el mistapek b'muot. Instead of knocking on doors, he'll manage somehow with what he has. And furthermore, he says that Talmid Chochmeinu tzorach lechazal psochim kevin sheyesh lo merachamim rabim shefarnesu. Many will have compassion over him, for him, and will sustain him. Omalei Reb Chia l'dbeisu. So Reb Chia talks to his wife, and he instructs her, and he says to her, Ki asi anya, if a poor person will come to you, I guess knocking on the door, Akname le rifta, be quick to offer him some bread. Ki eichd l'kadmu libnech, so that others will be quick to offer bread to your children if they have to become beggars. Omalei melech kolayis lehu, are you giving me like an ayin hara kind of thing? Are you cursing our children that they'll become poor? Omalei, so Reb Chia responds by quoting a pasuk, Kra koksiv, the pasuk says, as we saw this pasuk earlier, Ki biglal adover hazeh. And when it says, in return for this matter, Tanur Dei Rav Yishmael, that the word biglal should be read as galgal, hu shechozeh me'olam, that poverty is like a wheel that revolves in the world, and sooner or later, everyone becomes poor. So it's quite possible that our children might become paupers. And now there's a braisa that supports Reb Chia's comment to his wife that children should be dealt with charitably, and they will be dealt with them charitably if she deals with others charitably, Tanya. And that's what we're going to derive from this braisa. Tanya Rami Gamliel Berebi Omer, this is about the Kima Mitzvah of Yerani Dachas. It says, V'nasan l'cha rachamecha v'richamcha v'irbecha. So let's read this pasuk. It says, He will bestow upon you the attribute of compassion and show compassion to you and multiply you. So he's going to be medagdek and read this carefully. Kol merachem. Right, it already says, V'nasan l'cha rachamecha. So why does it have to say v'richamecha? It seems to be superfluous. And the answer is to teach us that if a person is compassionate towards his God's creatures, then he showed compassion by God from heaven. But this is what we call midah keneged midah. So if he's not compassionate towards God's creatures, then they will not show him compassion in heaven. And if a person is kind to a poor person, then he'll be treated kindly by God. So one should always consider that he's beseeching God to provide him a livelihood, and just as he desires that God should listen to his prayers, so too he should accede to the entreaties of the poor. And now the Gemara is going to look at the next part of Koheles. And this is again in Perek Yud Beis of Koheles. And it says there, Uzuchar Esborecha, Bimei Bechurosecha, as we quoted it earlier. You know, remember God during your youth. Ad Asher Lo Yavo Yimei Ra'ah, before you get to the older age, Yimei Ra'ah. V'igiu shonim asher tomar ein li bahem chefetz ad asher lo techshach hashemesh, before the sun sets ve'or v'yirech v'kochavim v'shavu avim tachas achar agoshem. So what does it mean ad asher lo techshach, before the sun gets dark ve'or, and the light grows dark? Shemesh, the word Shemesh here, is a reference to Padachas, which is the forehead, and achotem and the nose. Shametzach chilek or chalak, maybe umatziv. It's sort of, you know, it reflects the sunlight. Umeir yosef mikola partzuf, and there's more light coming from the forehead than the rest of the face. And this light is hachotem, is the nose, which really describes the toar ponov shel ha'odom. It really indicates the hadras ponim of a person. When a person grows old and his forehead becomes full of creases and wrinkles, shuvena matziv, it no longer like shines, you know, the reflection of the sun, so to speak. And his face is no longer ponim me'iros. So the pasuk really compares him to the darkness when the sun sets and the light weakens. The Gemara continues to explain this pasuk. The pasuk says ve'hayareach, and then it says va'kochavim hayareach zu neshama. So that's really interesting that the soul of a person is compared to the moon, shemeira li'odom kireach, and the neshama lightens up a person like the areach, as we say in Mishlei, ner Hashem nishmas odom. Now it says va'kochavim elu hal satos, which are the cheeks, and the cheeks are now being compared to the stars in the heavens, because they also shine. Afhem matzivim, they shine and even they give light. And then it says at the end of the pasuk, v'shavu ha'ovim achar hageshem, and the clouds return after the rain. And this is a reference to a person's eyesight. Zu mi'or einov shel odom shaholech machshich u'miskas achar abchi habechi, which goes and gets weakened by weeping. In other words, if he's yarbev b'chiyah b'ziknuso, if he's very weak and he cries a lot because the tzoros that he has, that's going to weaken his eyesight. And, you know, he's contemplates the fact that he's no longer as strong as he used to be. And we know that old age is full of many trials and troubles. He becomes depressed, chas v'shalom, he weeps bitterly, and this weeping has the effect of weakening his eyesight. So the weakening of eyesight follows the weeping that's described metaphorically as the clouds that follow the rains. And now we're up to Omar Shmuel. So let's just make a note of where we got up to. We're at the bottom of Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Beis. Omar Shmuel, and that is four lines, or let's say five lines up before the end of Kuf Nun Aleph Amid Beis.